Welcome to the Brooks Rehabilitation Podcast. My name is Tracy Davis. On this episode, we have Megan Hyman. She is the Pediatric Community Programs Manager. Megan is going to give us a little bit of her history, the history of pediatrics at Brooks, and the current state of pediatrics at Brooks Rehabilitation, and maybe a little bit of where we're headed. Right before we get into this episode, I wanted to remind you to go to brooksrehab.org. There you will find every single thing there is to know about Brooks Rehab at brooksrehab.org. And if you're interested in joining our team here at Brooks Rehabilitation, feel free to go to careers.brooksrehab.org and look for our current job openings. And finally, make sure you check us out on social media. We're constantly posting new updates, videos, photos, events that are going on. You can check us out at Brooks Rehab on every major social media platform. Again, thank you for listening, and we're going to get right into the episode. Megan, thanks for coming on the podcast. So first of all, let's just introduce yourself to everybody listening.
Well, thanks for having me, Tracy. This is really exciting. Introduce myself. How many minutes do I have? So I'm going to start by saying I am a pediatric occupational therapist and have been so proudly for 20 years. Amazing to think 20 plus years ago I was in school, but I have been wanting to work with children my entire life. So that was never a question for me when I was in school.
It
was
so just, high school too?
Absolutely. I always loved working with kids. I could work with all ages, but I just loved working with kids. It was so rewarding. So I didn't know in what capacity, and I had many experiences from volunteerism to, you know, service through school to after school clubs, and then, you know, really trying to work with kids who were, underprivileged, or those who had disabilities, or those who had difficulties of some sorts. I just was so fascinated by that, not only just because of what I could do, but trying to understand where they were coming from.
Okay.
So that kind of led me down the realm of psychology in college. I was definitely wanting to be some type of child psychologist, working in some capacity with kids, whether that was abnormal psychology, whether that was clinical. But I just was very interested in the why behind people's behavior, why they did things,
right,
and really digging down into, you know, not just why are you making those choices?
Right.
And why is that happening? And fascinated by that. And that took me on a little realm of understanding, you know, I had a little bit of interest in the abnormal psychology and the reasons why behind serial killers and all kinds of fascinating things.
It's a very fascinating...
It's truly a science when you get behind the horrific acts,
right,
and the why behind it, mm-hmm, and how your brain does things and why it interprets different things.
It's why all those shows are so popular, like true crime shows and, you know, Law and Order, and like everyone's interested in
We are interested in human beings because we're, you know, neuro-hardwired to be, you know, connected individuals. So I would hope we do have some level of curiosity in there, mm-hmm, whether it comes from compassion or whether it just comes from pure bizarre nature.
Right.
But yeah, so I wanted to do something in psychology. And then when I started really getting into the practice and getting into the, you know, the curriculum in college, I was like, oh, this is going to take me forever, mm-hmm, to really do what I want. And mm-hmm, I was like, I didn't want to wait that long. I didn't want to do necessarily, you could get the master's, but you really can't go very far with that. You need to go a little bit further.
In what school?
I went to University of Miami.
Okay.
So I am a minority around here in the Jacksonville parts.
I know.
But proud of it.
There's a lot of Gators around here.
Oh, well, that's okay. I mean, I'm okay with some of the other Florida schools, but you know, so I went to University of Miami coming down from, you know, Washington, D.C. area. So really a far trek for me.
Yeah.
But when I started studying, I was like, yeah, I wanted to be able to do something, you know, without having to go through the master's, through a PhD. So that's kind of when it became, okay, well, I can work with kids, but in what capacity?
Yeah.
And then it was like, well, let me discover and explore some of the other, you know, avenues. Didn't want to do teaching. Just for some reason, I mean, even though I love teaching, it just was limiting. Mm-hmm. And then I started exploring some of the allied health, probably because I was really just doing more observation hours. I worked in college with an advisor who did pre-med advising, and who really reviewed a lot of the charts and portfolios for kids or students who were applying to med school. So I really got a lot of interesting kind of information on the behind the scenes as to the types of curriculums, the types of classes, the types of opportunities. So when I started looking at observation hours just to explore where my next steps would be, and that was probably as like a junior in college, I discovered therapy. Now, I discovered all realms of therapy. So I observed physical therapy, I observed occupational therapy, and I knew some speech and language pathologists. Mm-hmm. And then it just, when I started really looking at how occupational therapy applies to pediatrics, it was just, wow, the psychology blend with it, the ability to work with such a diverse population, right, whether it's ages or diagnoses, just the ability to address so many aspects of daily function. I was like, yes, all
so
in.
So that over PT, like what about, yeah, just because of the, all the other aspects that come in other than just the actual movement?
I think, and again, I will say this because I was somewhat limited. I went and observed physical therapy in a sports medicine clinic. Mm-hmm. So obviously it has a very, very narrow focus. however, when I really started exploring, and this is not to speak ill of any one profession, but it's really just looking at what meshed with me and what spoke to me. So when I was looking at, you know, my concept at that time, which is very different from now, but my concept that time of exercises and just mobility and just looking at, you know, a certain snapshot in a child's functioning was limiting for me because, again, I was coming from a psychological background and I was like, I want to look at all the other aspects to that.
Sure.
So for me, I think it just blended better with who I was, what I was interested in, and the opportunities I think it would afford to me down the line in terms of where and how I could work with kids.
So how did you land at Brooks? And what were you doing when you first got to Brooks?
Ah, so I didn't plan to land at Brooks. It was kind of funny because I started working in a private practice in South Florida after I graduated. Mm-hmm. And so I worked in this fantastic private practice, multidisciplinary, learned a bazillion amount of information just because I was working so closely with all the other, you know, colleagues and professionals. So we really had a true interprofessional practice. Mm-hmm. So working there, but then we didn't want to stay in South Florida. That was totally just, you know, lifestyle change. Sure. We needed to get out. So we looked at Jacksonville and my husband was able to transfer, which was fabulous. So I said, I can go anywhere. So when I started looking up here, I was looking at both private practice. I was looking at large organizations and I knew Brooks had a name up here, mm-hmm. But I liked the fact that we had some diversity in terms of different avenues.
What time of what year was this?
This was 2006.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so we were way smaller than we were.
Oh, we were totally smaller. Yeah, we didn't even have a pediatric program.
We were like 12, 13 outpatient clinics.
Exactly. Yeah. And so if we think about that, I was like, okay, well, this is going from one private practice, two locations in a private
practice.
And
so people know we're like over 40 outpatient clinics now.
Oh, something like that. Probably close to 50.
Close to 50, yeah. Yep. I haven't checked in a while.
And we span from like Jacksonville down to like Orlando.
Yeah,
and
so, at that time, it was just Jacksonville.
Absolutely. Yeah. And we might have you know, dabbled in the Orlampa area, is what we called it.
Yeah.
But it was the first time I had looked at a rehabilitation network. Mm-hmm. So I had worked in a rehabilitation private practice in South Florida. But what I had become really excited about in South Florida was we had created our own network. So we were working with Miami Children's. We were working with private psychological practices where we could refer. We had some great networking, which is where I started appreciating working in a multidisciplinary team beyond the allied health. So I was like, okay, great. Well, I have a rehabilitation network that might have a lot of resources.
Yeah.
And then when I started looking and comparing with private practice, I said, well, let's try it out. I wasn't a fan of what I considered corporate America in terms of big practices. And then when I came here and I had the interview, and it's kind of funny because Victor DiRienzo was the manager who interviewed me and hired me.
That's funny.
So
now CEO, one of our CEOs.
Exactly. So 15 years later.
Yeah.
But the whole model of what they were looking to do was exciting to me. So not only was I being hired as a therapist to fill a role, I was being hired and viewed as a specialist, which was the first time, from what I understood, they were really looking at therapists for their specialty and looking at the potential to specialize in a population at Brooks. And so that was exciting to me because I felt like I was bringing something that I could share.
You could hear the growth was a part of what they wanted.
Absolutely. Yeah. It was very exciting. And so they were interested not only in what skills I had, but what I could bring to the setting. And so I was like, wow, that's a big opportunity for me because that allows me to grow and work with a huge number of people.
So how has PEDS grown at Brooks? We're going to get into some more of the specifics of what you do now, but how has PEDS grown from that time to now?
Wow. I'd have to think because that's thinking back 15 years, Tracy. I mean, think about that.
Because like, you were at the beginning of all of it, really. So
it's kind of crazy when I look back in retrospect as to where we've come. And I probably need to do that more often because when you actually start thinking about all the things that have been accomplished with so many great people involved, sure. it's really exciting. So we started with, you know, we actually started hiring and employing specialized clinicians, not just a generalist who would treat, and that was fine. But really moving, and I think that was the evolution, you know, when new leadership came on board at Brooks, that idea of programmatics and specialization. Mm-hmm. And so that evolution has come to hiring, you know, clinicians with a specialized background,
sure.
Looking at programmatics in terms of, you know, elevating that standard of care to where we have programmatics for specific populations.
Right.
We didn't have any programs outside of the inpatient hospital and outpatient. So this is like a huge evolution where we look at, gosh, we have what, 7 specialized programs in outpatient now, mm-hmm. where we really didn't have much that I was really aware of or that maybe was known in outpatient. You might have had pockets of people.
Yeah.
And that was also sort of in those first couple of years, the birth of specialized centers where you had the Centers for Sports Therapy. You had the Balance Center. All of those things started evolving because of this, you know, direction and the need to evolve into, we need to think about specialization
right.
for the populations. We do a lot really well, but we can do so much more better. Mm-hmm. So that was exciting. So if I think about pediatrics, I mean, we didn't have any specialized clinics. We had clinicians who were hired slowly to dress treat pediatrics and to shift that caseload from 50-50 adults peds to, you know, working 100% with peds.
Yeah.
And now we're at 10 clinics, you know, 2 of which are freestanding pediatric clinics
wow.
down in Daytona and St. Augustine. So you have 10 centers that have specialized multidisciplinary teams.
Yeah.
15 years later, you have a program that specializes just in pediatrics and really is looking at elevating their best practice and standards of care for pediatrics as a whole across 10 clinics. That's pretty amazing, and that requires a huge amount of infrastructure, vision, and organization in terms of people really getting on board. So the amount of people that have been brought into opportunities in pediatrics, I think, is exciting.
Yeah.
The fact that it's been identified as a specialization and a needed one,
mm-hmm.
Because it was always in the hospital. We had specialization in the hospital. But to extend that really extends the opportunities for a continuum of care. And then a lot of the growth that I think has extended well beyond the skilled therapy setting.
Absolutely. Well, so that's great. I mean, that's a little bit of a good background of not just your history, but some of the history of peds at Brooks and where we started with it. Because peds is such an important part of what we do at Brooks. So let's talk a little bit about today. What are you doing now? Like, what is your job title, I guess? And then what do you oversee at Brooks?
So my job title is Pediatric Community Programs Manager.
Okay.
So we've had a couple of, you know, pediatric programs outside of the skilled therapy setting. So mm-hmm. we've had, you know, the inpatient rehab, we've had the outpatient program, and we've had a longstanding community program, the school reentry program, that's been here over 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
But what I found was, and this was probably about 5 years ago or so, what I found was that it was very disjointed. So we were focusing on programmatics, but we were focusing on it really by division. And when we're looking at a continuum of care, we need to have better collaboration and we need to have better coordination between those different divisions, especially if we're talking about a population like pediatrics. Pediatrics is unique because you're often not coming for a certain diagnosis.
Right.
You might be referred for that, but what are families looking for? And what are they? What is the interest for families when they're looking for a care setting?
Yeah.
What can you bring to my child? What can you offer for my child? What can you offer for my family?
Yeah.
And so I think it's important that when we're talking about pediatric rehabilitation, we have to look at the angle and the lens of the families.
Right.
We have to look at what's important to them. And so when we look at things like, yes, we can provide therapy. We can also provide educational support.
Yeah.
We can also provide recreational and community-based support because children are going to grow. They're going to need those services.
Yep.
If we're truly talking about those who have congenital conditions or even those with acute or traumatic, they're going to be needing different levels of support throughout their entire life.
Yep.
So it's not a one and done, and it's not a we're going to work on this for this many months. They're going to need those different levels of support. So kind of coming full circle
yeah.
back to where I saw, you know, my current position. I kind of saw the opportunity to weave that continuum of care better and to get better representation for pediatrics across multiple platforms. So I'm now the pediatric community programs manager, which evolved in combination with my work in outpatient. So I was working as a clinician in outpatient. I was actually the pediatric outpatient program coordinator. Mm-hmm. And so therefore I was like, this is a wonderful blend. I need to make sure that pediatrics is represented not only within our company, but within our community.
Sure.
So now I've kind of evolved into, and those opportunities provided me with some really fantastic learning opportunities.
Yeah, sure.
I was like, wow, not only am I being challenged to work and use a different part of my brain, but I'm getting to work with different people and looking at what I do for the end user, for the patient, for the family, mm-hmm. how that connects, how it connects from an executive level and a programmatic level all the way down to the clinician. And so I got really excited because I started working with people where I could help make that connection and help bridge that. Here's why, you know, this is what's important in therapy, but here's what we have to make sure right. that we're sharing the story and making sure we tell the right story to the right people.
Sure.
So that blend was really exciting for me. And I think that's kind of evolved into I get pure joy out of working with and supporting other people to grow, whether that be from a patient perspective or whether that be from a team perspective.
Right.
So I've evolved into slowly phasing out of direct patient care, which happened in 2020. August 2020 was-
So you're not seeing patients like-
No, right. And that was a huge like identity thing for me because mm-hmm. August 2020, that was 20 years after I had-
Yeah.
You know, become a therapist. Mm-hmm. And my job was to work with patients. And so that was a big identity change for me because I still have the mentality of a clinician, which I hope I never lose. Mm-hmm. But then I have to say, well, how does this then relate? How do I support and serve a broader number of people in a different way? And that's what I get excited about because
sure.
everything I was doing on a one-on-one basis, I can now just scale that and amplify that.
Yeah.
And I'm challenged to do that with teams and now on an organizational level. So I am thrilled and very, very humbled.
So let's talk about Peds Rec specifically.
Yes.
So what is pediatric recreation?
Okay, pediatric recreation. So we call the pediatric recreation program. It is truly a year-round adaptive sports and recreation program for youth. It was designed originally, when we wrote the Performa in 2015, we were seeing that families had a very difficult time, and this is when I was an outpatient. Mm-hmm. Families had a very difficult time finding the resources and connecting and integrating with the community to find the opportunities for their children. Mm-hmm. They were concerned about the level of commitment. Were the people going to be comfortable working with their child? Was their child going to like it?
Yeah.
Was there a financial investment that you
so
know,
the parents were like, we're so happy with the therapy that we're getting, but we need our kid to have specific community connect to.
I don't think it was said that kindly.
But do you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Is that what you're saying?
Like, absolutely.
So how am I going to trust people with
correct.
My kid and all? Okay.
And what we were also seeing was therapists needed resources.
Yeah.
Holy smokes. Because, you know, for families who, you know, for clinicians who are treating pediatrics, you're seeing them pretty frequently. And oftentimes that becomes a very comfortable setting for families.
Sure.
And so what therapists also need is they need opportunities. They need resources. And it can be a full-time job just figuring out all the resources in the town. So when we have so many families here who are, you know, coming in town or moving here for jobs or military, we need to make sure that we have a better network of resources to connect families with, whether they are first here and whatever journey point they're at. So we saw the need for, of course, families and their children to be able to connect and have opportunities that were safe and supportive in the community. Mm-hmm. But also we have to recognize this indirect benefit to the clinicians because now they can help their families envision a longer plan of care that may extend well beyond the skilled therapy environment.
Yeah, outside of just coming to their therapy appointments. They need their kids. They need more. They need stuff to do.
But as a parent, and I can say this, sometimes you have a hard time mm-hmm. thinking beyond where you are now.
Right.
It's hard enough to figure out where you are now.
Absolutely.
You need someone to paint that picture for you as to here's what's going to happen next, or here's what you can do in combination to your therapy
right.
that gets you connected and finds other resources and support systems that then you feel more comfortable and empowered, because in the end, that's what it's about. It's giving the parents tools so that they can advocate for their own child.
So what was the first pediatric rec? Sport, event, community thing.
Pediatric recreation actually started probably like 2 or 3 years prior to its actual, you know, implementation.
Okay.
I was working with a fantastic therapeutic recreation specialist in the hospital, and she was passionate about aquatics. So we started, I kind of was like excited because I worked with her just on some other projects in the pediatric program. And so she started doing pro bono classes and just like, let's try this out. Is this something that's of interest?
Right.
And luckily that turned into a grant that we received from Comcast that allowed us to provide aquatic based classes after hours, which was fantastic because, oh my gosh, what a need and how many people were excited about it. So that then gave us, and she and I worked on the performer together, really gave us the leverage to say, how could we create this into something bigger?
Yeah.
What does this really, you know, what is this the launching point for? And so that's when we started really looking at, and that's what we leveraged to saying, we have aquatics classes. That's really what we started with. We started the pediatric program with a loyal following of aquatics classes that
Where'd
we held.
Where'd you do it at?
At the hospital.
So it was here?
Yes, okay. It was here. And it was very convenient for people. And it was the perfect space because all of our classes are small. They're designed to be small. We never offer that it's a one-on-one setting. It's really a recreation program. So it's going to be small group based.
Okay.
So that's really where it started. And that was the birth of it. And that's still to this day our most requested activity. Mm-hmm. But from there, we really had to say, what activities do families want and what is not necessarily as accessible in the community? Not what's not available. It might be available, but sometimes things are available to certain pockets of people.
Okay.
So we wanted to try to say, how do we make some of these highly coveted or very impactful programs more accessible? And so that kind of rolled into some other activities. We tried art, we did dance, we did sports. And over time, that's really evolved into some 2 organized team sports and a variety of recreation activities that revolve throughout the year. So we are year round.
Yep.
We occur at a time when children and their families can attend. So when children and families are either working or at school, we have to look at when is this program accessible. After school, weekend hours, but we do also offer daytime programming for those who are, you know, before they reach school or those who are homeschooled. And that continues to grow.
Okay.
So our programs really are a result of feedback we get from our consumers and ones that we see as opportunities to bring something new to the community.
So what other activities are we doing now?
Okay, so we're currently in the season of we are doing gardening. We are doing a dance workshop, and actually a first dance workshop for those who are both wheelchair users and non-wheelchair users.
Okay.
So we're going to be we're trying to see if that's an opportunity. We always start every activity that we have with some type of workshop, clinic, kind of special event.
Okay.
But we rotate in seasons. So right now we're kind of in our winter season. So we are doing cooking, which is indoors. We're going to have a dance workshop. We're getting ready for our gardening program, which will start in March, which is really exciting. That's a new program we started as a result of COVID.
Where are you doing the gardening?
The garden actually was we have a donated space down in Northwest St. John's County.
Oh, okay.
And so it's on a private property, but this gentleman and this family really, you know, provide access to their space and their farm for different reasons. So Special Olympics will do training down there for their equestrian program. And so there's a big garden that is just not really maintained on a regular basis.
Yeah.
So we provided the proposal and the family was very willing. So we are going into our third season of gardening, which is really exciting.
Yeah.
So we're going to be kind of, you know, we've been rebuilding ever since we kind of had a little bit of a halt due to COVID.
Yep.
And so we've been kind of pivoting and providing and creating new activities and opportunities that are maybe outdoors, that are smaller in nature, but we want to get back to our larger special events, our skating event that happens once a month. We want to get back to our dance classes. It's been harder to find locations in the community where we can work with our partners just because people are being very cautious and safe as a result of COVID, but we are still adapting. We're still rolling along. Our basketball program right now is running strong.
Yep.
They've just started competing for the first time in 2 years, which is just so exciting to see.
Yeah.
And so they have a couple more tournaments going. So in the summer times, we have partnerships with local private summer camps where we will bring programming to them. So we kind of saw this about 3 years ago where we provide programming in the community for people to come to us. Well, we need to start looking for opportunities where we can bring programming to one spot.
I mean, as you're saying all that, I knew some of these things, but as you're saying that, you just can't help but think of what a need this has to be filling in the community. You know what I mean?
It's like,
it'd be great if this was like a nationwide kind of thing. You know, I'm sure that would blow your mind as to how to handle that.
But. It, well, the amazing thing is when you look at other states, you see cities really running with this. Yeah. And they're either city or local governments who are funding these adaptive recreation programs. And with our success of the Brooks Adaptive Sports and Recreation Program and their collaborations with the city of Jacksonville, you know, that's kind of how we shaped a lot of the pediatric recreation program initially, because we knew we had that model in which to follow.
Yeah.
Now, there's definitely some differences because of the population, because of the schedule, and just because of the types of activities. But we really do have that, you know, we really do have that model in which to go from. But many other cities and many other states have some phenomenal adaptive recreation programs. Not as many are private, but there are a lot. But what I'm just excited by is when you look at, yes, there's ways to do this. You don't have to canvas the entire market. You just have to know what you do well.
Sure. And we want to make sure we mention too, just like adaptive sports and recreation, you don't have to do peds rec. You do not have to be a Brooks patient.
Absolutely not.
You can just, you know, parents sign their kids up. And how do they do that while we're here?
Great question. So we ask, we do not need a referral to get to our program or to be registered for our program. We get referrals from a lot of different ways. You can be referred from a therapist, whether that be a Brooks therapist, someone over at Wolfson, someone in a private practice. You can get a referral, you can be recommended from your school-based therapist. What we ask is that families contact us directly.
Okay.
It's better because then there's that intention and commitment.
Right.
So we get requests via email. We get requests via phone. We do have a Facebook group. And so that's a great way to kind of see what we've been up to learn about us and to connect with us. We also just have a general email box. And so that's usually where we get most of our requests.
Okay.
And if you want to register for our program, it's just a matter of reaching out to us. We'll get you the registration paperwork. We like to do an orientation meeting, whether that's in person or Zoom. It's usually about 30 to 45 minutes, but it allows us to really get to know the family,
sure,
get to know the child, and answer their questions. Because what we like to try to do is find an activity sooner than later to get them involved with that is going, right, to be the right match.
So what's that email address?
So that email address is pediatricrecreation@brooksrehab.org.
Okay. And I'll make sure I put that in the description of this podcast.
Thank you.
So before we're running out of time, I wanted to, let's talk about school reentry really quick.
Yes.
You mentioned that it's been at Brooks for over 30 years,
absolutely,
right?
Absolutely.
So what is school reentry?
So school reentry, and I want to make sure that I do it justice because it's expanded quite a bit, yeah, over the years. School reentry is really a transitional service. It's a transitional support service for our patients. Now, originally when it was created for our inpatient population, because that really does need the most amount of support once you've transitioned from a highly acute environment like a hospital,
yeah,
back into a home environment. And,
yeah,
many of our patients or former patients are not ready to go right back into a school setting.
Sure.
So that educational support is one that really, that's a common thread no matter what stage of recovery you're in for children. And so education to me is that lifelong service, depending, right, on how old. And that's what I think is really cool and amazing about the program is it really will follow families and their students for as long as it's needed.
Right.
So being a community-based service means that it's available for whatever questions or needs there are. So really, if we think about the transitional service and support that inpatient would need, a patient needs to be, you know, their educational plan might need to be modified in the school setting. They might need a step down type of setting before they return to their school setting. So sometimes that's homebound services, educational services, making sure that all of the accommodations and the abilities that that child has are documented and are advocated for in the classroom.
So on a tactical level, like let's say maybe there's an example of a certain,
yes,
certain student that, mm-hmm, what was their injury and then how did the school reentry program help them?
So we can do this on a state level or a international level or outside because school reentry will really serve students both in the state of Florida, outside the states of outside of our immediate state and surrounding states and even international. So, you know, I can give you two quick examples,
sure,
of an inpatient to an outpatient. So a child could have an injury, whether that's a near drowning or a spinal cord injury or car accident. And so they're going to spend, you know, several weeks in our inpatient hospital. And so there they're going to get intensive therapy on a day-to-day basis. But really the preparation that school reentry is thinking about is what are their needs going to be when they leave? Mm-hmm. Not only what are their educational needs in terms of not falling too far behind while they're in school, but how are we preparing and getting that family ready with the documentation and the communication with their school base? Okay. So if they're communicating with the county, if they're trying to ensure and get hospital homebound or homebound educational services set up, they're working with the family to prepare them for meetings that will come up if their educational plan or their curriculum needs to be adapted for some reason. And so they will follow that family well beyond discharge. They're working with them not only in the hospital, but then as they are discharged, they are following up with them. They are establishing and setting up meetings with school officials to make sure that all of the documentation is proper and that if they should need an individual educational plan, an IEP, that is enforced.
And then making sure that the school, is there a part of it that's to make sure that the school might not be, they might not have an understanding or a level of understanding of what this kid just went through. So they need to kind of liaison for that family to help them understand.
Absolutely. They are a huge advocate for the child, a huge advocate for the families, and really empowering and educating those families to advocate for the child themselves. Right. So then once they are, the goal is to transition them back into their previous school environment,
right.
And then providing those supports to the family and to the school to ensure that the student's needs are met. So that's that transition from inpatient. Now, that child could be receiving outpatient services at the same time. Mm-hmm. I think the neat thing about school reentry is it's really blossomed into serving our outpatient community. So we get referrals from our clinicians in outpatient for needs for advocacy, for needs for information. If a family doesn't know what kind of services their child is receiving, or they're uncertain about this upcoming IEP meeting, or what they can advocate for their child, our school reentry team will review their records. Again, this is, you have to be a patient at ours, but this is part of our continuum of care. Mm-hmm. They will review the files and they will be able to make the recommendations and give the family the tools to be able to advocate and represent for their child.
That's great. Before we move on, anything else for school reentry? Is there an email to this?
Yes, absolutely. It is schoolreentry@brooksrehab.org. And I just want to put a shout out to the school reentry team because they work so hard. They have such an amazing educational and clinical mindset because they have to blend that educational and clinical information. And I just want to say, I'm just so excited to work with them. I learn from them every day. It's one of those little nuggets that not many people know about at Brooks, but it really is what sets us apart. And
absolutely.
I think there's opportunities for us to utilize them more and really be able to serve all those needs that our students have. And I think it provides assistance for clinicians. Again, thinking about how to support our staff by knowing the resources that are available within our own organization.
Absolutely. And they won an award last year.
They did. They won the Celebrate the Team Award.
That's
so it's about time. I will definitely say over 30 years, it's about time.
Absolutely.
I'm thrilled.
Okay. Lastly is Think First. What is Think First?
So Think First is a true injury prevention program that is for the community. It extends really outside the walls. We do a lot of internal education at Brooks, but it extends outside the walls of Brooks to the community. So the outreach piece is really about education for the community, but for our youth for injury prevention.
Okay.
So really how to think first.
Right.
So we have relationships with local schools, both private and public. We have relationships with YMCA, First Coast YMCA, and we provide educational presentations to groups. And that can be a small group setting, that can be an auditorium style, but really about Think First is a fantastic organization, a national organization, really with chapters set up in every state, and usually multiple chapters per state. So the fact that we are harnessing and really utilizing the youth-based curriculum, they've developed an evidence-based curriculum that's targeted for different age groups. So we provide that curriculum on a community level to be able to help kids be aware of injury prevention, learn different parts of the brain and the spinal cord. And then we use a lot of community give back through helmet fittings, through health fairs, just to be able to raise awareness for that. And so that
they're targeting like different age groups for correct. This age group rides bicycles more and, you know, or this for swimming or
absolutely.
So different injury prevention type stuff. Depending
absolutely.
On their age group.
And we work really closely with Safe Kids Coalition of Northeast Florida.
Okay.
So, you know, there's a lot of people who are doing this work. And so what we're trying to do is, you know, there's enough work to be done.
Yeah.
So what we're just trying to do is connect with places in the community where we can provide that free education, yeah. always important.
Yeah.
Because yeah, we can provide, you know, the presentations, and we do that with First Coast YMCA at their summer camps. We look for those target audiences where we can get to them the earlier the better. Mm-hmm. But there is, you know, evidence-based curriculum that's age appropriate for first grade all the way up through high school.
That's excellent. That's fantastic. If someone, how do people get involved in that? Is it something they can find out where a presentation's happening?
Absolutely. So we have what we call a director of our Think First program here locally. And so she pretty much coordinates all the presentations. Everybody who's involved around Think First is on a volunteer basis.
Okay.
So we love having people to help with helmet fittings. You know, we love having people to help with school presentations. It's a great opportunity for interns or people who are needing observation hours. Mm-hmm. If they want to connect, they can definitely reach out to thinkfirst@brooksrehab.org and find out if they're interested in a presentation, if they're interested in volunteering, if they want to learn more about our opportunities or where we're going to be next. We're really excited to start community fairs and slowly start to get back into these larger organized events where we can really, you know, see a greater number of people. But we've done some great smaller school-based presentations most recently, which has been highly effective.
Well, thank you for your time. I mean, hopefully people will see just how important PEDS is to our system of care at Brooks. I mean, and that's why we always like to talk about the system of care that we have here, because it's very unique. Mm-hmm. And PEDS obviously fits right into that. And it's been great to hear the growth that we've had on pediatrics. Anything else you wanted to say?
We're not done. There's lots more to come.
Yeah.
And I think just knowing that there's so many opportunities to get involved, we have some fantastic clinicians and some fantastic leaders. So I want to encourage anybody who's new to Brooks to get involved, to step up. There's opportunities. Create your own opportunities if you need to. And if you've been at Brooks a while, thank you for being here and continue to reach out, because there's so many resources that we have, but we also have to determine the need for.
That's great. So one final time, the PEDS Rec email address?
PediatricRecreation@BrooksRehab.org.
And then school reentry?
SchoolReentry@BrooksRehab.org.
And Think First?
ThinkFirst@BrooksRehab.org.
Easy enough.
Absolutely.
Thank
Trying
you.
To do so.
Thanks for coming on, Megan.
Oh, thanks for inviting me, Tracy. This is an awesome opportunity.